This is Jim Inkster coming today on the show. We'll look at the year of 2013 as we start a new year. Jeff Rodell of 225 is slated to be with us, and he'll weigh in on some personalities and people to watch for this year. Also on the show, Jim Simone, the general manager of the American Sugarcane League, an industry that produces over $3 billion a year to the Louisiana economy. Much to discuss, including LSU's loss in Atlanta to close the 2012 football season, the eighth year of Les Miles. And tonight, Muhammad Ali returns to the Superdome, the place where he won his last fight in 1978. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. You may reach us also via email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Excuse me. I think we're okay now, and unfortunately, our leadoff guest today is unavailable. Jeff Rodell has opted not to appear on the program today, and that's his prerogative. He is the editor of 225. A few items to discuss. Today would have been the 90th birthday of James Schoaf Featherston, one of the great journalists of all time, who taught at LSU for more than a quarter century, and a man who was at the precipice of history. He was probably the last person photographed with John Kennedy outside of those in the limousine on November 22, 1963, less than a minute before John Kennedy was assassinated. Jim Featherston, covering the event in Dallas as a journalist, was a few feet away from the presidential limousine when the 35th American president was killed, at least less than a minute before that fateful moment on 22 November 1963. But Featherston was a Pulitzer Prize winner and affected many in the industry profoundly, including yours truly, and he was born on this date, January 2, 1923, in Vicksburg, Mississippi. We will always remember Jim Featherston, who died in October of 2000. In the legislative maneuvering over the weekend regarding the fiscal cliff, the lawmakers on Capitol Hill ended up approving a plan that will keep the wheels rolling. Final vote was 257 to 167 in the House of Representatives. Plenty of Republicans, including Speaker John Boehner, voted for the deal. In Louisiana, Steve Scalise, John Fleming, Bill Cassidy, Jeff Landry, and Charles Bustani all voted against the proposal. Rodney Alexander was the lone GOP member to support the deal. Cedric Richmond, the only Democrat in the Louisiana delegation from New Orleans, the delegation's only Democrat, cast a vote in support of the bargain. All but Landry will return tomorrow when the 113th Congress takes their seats. Now, Jeff Landry lost his bid to stay in the U.S. House of Representatives, falling to Charles Bustani, and two Republicans were thrown into the same district because Louisiana lost a congressional seat due to population not measuring up to the growth around the country. 297-5633 is your number if you'd like to join the conversation, and it is curious that the congressman from the Baton Rouge area, Bill Cassidy, who was identified in one story as a Republican from Highland Park. He was born in Highland Park, Illinois. Bill Cassidy has been in Baton Rouge for some time. He voted no, and hopefully we will have him on the show sometime very soon to discuss his vote. Many Republicans voted yes, otherwise the plan would not have passed, but on the whole, more GOP members of the U.S. House voted no than yes on the bill regarding the fiscal cliff. LSU, the Tigers, falling to Clemson in the season finale, 25-24 at Atlanta, Georgia, in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. LSU had had great success in Atlanta and the Georgia Dome prior to game the other night. The Tigers were 9-1 in Atlanta at the Georgia Dome, but Clemson, with a 37-yard field goal to end the game, defeated the Tigers by a score of 25-24. And Les Miles closes year number 8 with a record of 10-3. In the old days, that would be considered something that would be cause for pride. And Miles will be getting a salary increase and a contract extension after flirting with an offer from the University of Arkansas. But today, with the stratospheric expectations, 10-3 is no longer considered a good season at LSU. The Tigers will be out of the top 10 for the first time in a few years. And in the last two bowl games, LSU has not fared well regarding overall yardage. And actually, against Alabama last year, gained just 92 yards. And against Clemson the other night, just 219. And Alabama and Clemson both moved the ball well against the Tigers. So the last two bowl games have not gone well for LSU. And even though the score was 25-24, and LSU very well could have won the game, the Tigers did not play that well and had only 9 first downs to Clemson's 32. So Les Miles will have to regroup. He is on the recruiting trail. Tigers are expected to have another outstanding recruiting season, and we'll see where it goes from here. But right now, the man who preceded Les Miles as coach of the Tigers, Nick Saban, is preparing for the BCS championship game in Miami, Florida, as Alabama faces Notre Dame. And if the Crimson Tide wins, Alabama will have won 3 of the last 4 national championships. And, of course, Saban won the national title, the BCS championship in New Orleans, in 2003. Actually, it was January 4, 2004, as LSU beat Oklahoma. So Miles has the misfortune to be the successor to Saban, who right now is the hottest coach in all the land. But things can change, and it wasn't so long ago, on November 3rd, less than 2 months ago, when LSU barely lost at home to Alabama by a score of 21-17. And if that game had gone LSU's way, LSU might very well be playing for the national championship tonight. But the Tigers lost some close ones this year. 1 point to Clemson, 4 points to Alabama, 8 points to Florida. But they also won some very close games. They beat Auburn, really a pitiful team this year. Auburn almost beat the Tigers of LSU. The score was 12-10, so LSU was fortunate to prevail. But the Tigers also won close games over Ole Miss, 41-35, over the University of Arkansas, 20-13. They had several games in which they were in danger of losing, and perhaps the most impressive win of the season was a close one, but it was a win at College Station over Texas A&M and their Heisman Trophy quarterback, and the LSU prevailed in that one by a score of 24-19. But next year will be interesting, and the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, Johnny Manziel, will be featured at Tiger Stadium, and Texas A&M faces LSU in year number 9 for Les Miles, who with 85 wins has now won more games than any other LSU coach except Charles Y. McClendon. And Miles will be poised to approach 100 wins next year. If he had won the game in Atlanta the other night, he would have 86 victories, meaning a perfect season next year would have given Miles 100 victories. And even though LSU finished this season in lackluster fashion, allowing more than 300 yards passing to the last 4 teams the Tigers played, the expectations will be ripe for national championship contention in 2013. And remember, LSU was preseason number 1 this year, this past year, 2012, in many preseason polls and magazines and others who thought the Tigers would be better than they turned out to be. Former heavyweight champion Muhammad Ali will return to the Louisiana Superdome tonight. And Ali is now 70 years old. He'll be 71 on the 17th of January. He won his last fight in the city of New Orleans at the Superdome, September 15th, 1978. He beat Leon Spinks to regain the title. It was the third time that Ali had won the heavyweight title. And Muhammad Ali then retired, came out of retirement, was brutally defeated, although not knocked out. He lost on a TKO to Larry Holmes in Las Vegas in 1980, and then lost a closer fight to Trevor Burbick to close his career in 1981. But his last victory was in New Orleans, and that's where he will be tonight as part of the Sugar Bowl festivities. And you ask, why is that the case? Not only is it his connection to New Orleans, but it's his connection to the University of Louisville, which is playing Florida in the Sugar Bowl. So Ali was born in that city, January 17, 1942. He won the gold medal in the 1960 Olympics in Rome, then threw his medal in the Ohio River, and ultimately became the heavyweight champion of the world in 1964 over Sonny Liston. And there is little doubt that he was the greatest heavyweight of them all. And at age 70, he is battling the ravages of all those brutal bouts in the ring and Parkinson's, but he remains one of the great icons of all time, and he is alive and will be on the field at the Louisiana Superdome. The great Muhammad Ali, crowned King of Boxing during a WBC, World Boxing Council convention last month. There was nobody quite like him. And today, as we heard from a guest a few weeks ago, more people know Muhammad Ali than they do the reigning heavyweight champion of boxing today. His legacy is immense, named by many as the greatest athlete of the 20th century. And if the names Michael Jordan and Babe Ruth were not at the top of the list, usually Muhammad Ali was listed as number one. And there was no cultural icon. He transcended sport, and his impact on the culture was something that went way beyond his talents in the ring, which were like few others. And remember, he spent 3.5 years on the sidelines, did Muhammad Ali, by virtue of the fact that he was banned from boxing because he did not report for military duty when he was drafted. He ultimately won his case before the U.S. Supreme Court on a unanimous decision. And Muhammad Ali returned to the ring in 1970, a much different fighter. He had gained weight. He had gotten stronger, but he was not nearly as fast. And on the 8th of March in 1971, he lost his first fight to Joe Frazier, the first of a trilogy, three memorable fights, the last being the most memorable, the Thrilla in Manila. And it was Joe Frazier who died this year. This past year, 2012, was one of the most prominent fighters of all time, and he and Ali fought three of the most riveting bouts in the history of boxing, 1971, 1974, and 1975. The first two went the distance, 15 rounds and 12 rounds, and then the last one went 14 rounds, and Frazier was unable to report for duty in the final round in Manila in 1975, and Ali, in perhaps his most memorable fight, prevailed against his most memorable opponent, Smokin' Joe Frazier. When we return, we will visit later this hour with Jim Simone, who is head of the National Sugarcane League, and this is a major industry in our state, over $3 billion, and we'll also reflect some on folks who passed away in 2012 and their legacies and where we go from here. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. Back after this 1.5 minute pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757, and you may reach us via email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. As noted, the fiscal wheels will continue to churn. There wasn't the so-called fiscal cliff to deal with because the Louisiana delegation, along with many other U.S. senators, overwhelmingly came to accord on a deal that was ironed out at the 11th, maybe 12th hour by Vice President Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell, the Republican senatorial leader from Kentucky. And it was an overwhelming vote in the United States Senate in favor of the plan. In the House, it was much closer. 257 to 167, and that vote was a resounding margin, but still a majority of Republicans voted no, and they included Steve Scalise of Metairie, John Fleming of Minden, Bill Cassidy, Baton Rouge, Jeff Landry, New Iberia, and Charles Bustani of Lafayette. They all voted against the proposal. And I think all five of those signed that pledge by Grover Norquist that they would not be in favor of any tax increases at all. And that bill that passed will impose a tax increase of for those earning over $450,000. If you're a couple, $400,000 if you're an individual taxpayer. So it does have a tax increase that was not palatable to at least five members of the Louisiana delegation. Notably, though, U.S. Senator David Vitter voted for the plan, as did Democrat Mary Landrieu. And David Vitter, as we know, is a staunch conservative and not one to vote for something like this without much thought, consideration, and consultation. And he voted yes, but five members of the House delegation voted no, including Bill Cassidy, who is ramping up for a run next year, 2014. That's right, next year against Mary Landrieu, who will be seeking a fourth term, most likely, in office. Landrieu has won three relatively close elections, winning the first time by 5,788 votes over Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins in 1996, then winning by a few percentage points over Susie Terrell in 2002, and in 2008, on the same day that President Obama was elected, although doing poorly in Louisiana with just 39.9% of the votes, Mary Landrieu received over 53% of the votes in her race against John Kennedy, the state treasurer. So she, according to the last poll conducted by Bernie Pinsonat, is perhaps the most popular office holder in our state, and she goes against the grain as a statewide Democrat who is successful. There are no other Democrats statewide who have been victorious in recent years. All the state office positions, the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, the treasurer, the ag commissioner, the insurance commissioner, they're all Republicans, but Senator Landrieu has bucked the trend, and she most likely will seek re-election next year as she seeks a fourth term on Capitol Hill. And she is a veteran of the Louisiana legislature, first being elected in 1979. So Mary Landrieu has been around for a while, and at 57, you would think she has more years left if she so chooses. She's got a long ways to go to reach the seniority that Daniel Inouye, the senator from Hawaii, had. He died earlier this year, in fact, last month, at the age of 88, and he had served in the United States Senate for 49 years. He was a member of Congress when Hawaii became a state and when President Obama was born there on August 4, 1961. So he was there 49 years. He was the second longest U.S. senator serving of all time, and Daniel Inouye died at the age of 88. Many remember him in 1973 when he was part of the Watergate Congressional Committee investigating the shenanigans of President Nixon, and he by far was the longest-serving U.S. senator in office now. Now, Kevin Gallagher, some of the other notables, as we discussed yesterday with John Word of The Advocate, who passed away, included the likes of Ernest Borgnine, 95 years old, won an Academy Award for Marty, and also was synonymous with McHale's Navy, and some of Richard Fisher, who was producing yesterday, some of his favorite television icons passed away, including Larry Hagman, 81, who was not only on Dallas, but I Dream of Jeannie, and in 1980, when our next guest was all of 4 years old, Larry Hagman and the crew of Dallas received 83 million viewers for the episode of Who Shot J.R.? And Larry Hagman passed away last month, November 23rd, at the age of 81. Good morning to you, Jeff Palermo. We lost Jeff Rodell. We've got Jeff Palermo, the news and sports director of the Louisiana Radio Network. And I mentioned some of the news items of the last few days, including LSU's disappointing finish, losing to Clemson 25-24 in Atlanta. That game was not nearly as close as the score indicated.
No, and, you know, you look at the final stats, and if you just looked at the stats and didn't watch the game, well, you would sit there and say, well, Clemson should have won. But if you watch the game, you sit there and say, well, LSU should have won. When you're up by 11 points in the fourth quarter, you have a guy in Jeremy Hill who's averaging 10 yards a carry. You don't give him the football a single time in the fourth quarter, just another peculiar decision there by Les Miles and his offensive coaches as far as what they were trying to get accomplished there in the fourth quarter. You know, Miles said after the game that because there were so many guys up on the line of scrimmage defensively for Clemson that they wanted to throw the football. But, I mean, after Matt Flynn left and during that period where you had, you know, Jarrett Lee, Jordan Jefferson, Andrew Hatch there for a while. I mean, that's what LSU was facing, was 8-9 men fronts, and they always ran the football. Why they decided in the fourth quarter it was better, or really in the second half, to throw the football instead of giving it to a guy that was really unstoppable is it's really peculiar. It's another strange decision by Coach Les Miles, and it's amazing for a guy that's won 80% of his games. I think the fan base is thinking or remembers more about the games that LSU should have won instead of the games that they've won.
Well, Les Miles is the least popular coach in America, probably, with a winning percentage of 80% or more. But he's got a 7-year contract. Presumably it'll be at about $4.2 million a year. So he's going to be okay. Les Miles, and you know, he's had great success. And I noted that if it were not for Nick Saban preceding him, he might be more popular than he is. But he's losing some players. Some people are going out early.
Yeah,
it looks like Brad Wing is history.
Yeah, and Brad Wing's announcement, we're expecting that today, that he'll forego his senior season. But I think the big concern is on defense. You know, and LSU's lost players before early to the NFL draft, Patrick Peterson, Morris Claiborne, Michael Brockers, but when they lost players like that, there were other guys ready to step in and fill their voids. This, you know, if they lose Barkevious Mingo, Sam Montgomery, Kevin Minter, Eric Reed, it's really hard to identify who those guys will be to replace those type of players. I mean, it's going to be a significant loss. I know Scott Rabelais wrote in the Baton Rouge Advocate that he expects LSU to be ranked preseason top 10 next season. I don't see that happening. If they receive the losses on defense personnel wise that we're expecting, plus another, you know, average to below average performance on offense like we saw in the Chick-fil-A Bowl, and questions again about whether, you know, Zach Mettenberger and this passing game and the offense in general is ever going to take off, I think you're looking at a team that goes into next season, you know, ranked somewhere between, you know, 13 or 17. So, and we know when you're ranked that high, there's no margin of error when it comes to possibly playing for a national championship.
Well, I noted a few times in the discussion leading up to our visit with you that on another topic, five Republicans voted against the fiscal cliff salvation in Louisiana, including Bill Cassidy. And yet U.S. Senator David Vitter voted for the plan. That is a curious development.
Yeah, curious. Congressman Alexander is one that voted for it as well, and I actually just spoke with him before I came in here, Jim, and he said the big reason why I voted for it was because it makes permanent those Bush tax cuts on the Bush income tax cuts on middle-class taxpayers, and he felt it was good to finally get those taxes on the book or take those taxes off the book permanently so it's no longer used as a political football in future negotiations when it comes to the budget. The bill also contained the extension of the farm bill, which obviously is very crucial for Congressman Alexander. Haven't heard or really even read a statement from Senator Vitter on why he voted for it, but it's interesting also that, you know what, 89, 88 senators voted for it. So an overwhelming response to the bill while in the House. There were some that were really dragging their feet on the legislation.
Well, David Vitter, perhaps showing some leftist colors, according to five members of the Louisiana delegation who held the line on no new taxes. Interestingly, all three doctors in the delegation, Fleming, Bustani, and Cassidy, voted no. And Bill Cassidy, I'm sure, will use this as a campaign issue next year if he runs, according to most observers, he'll be an opponent to Senator Landrieu.
Yeah, and I also saw another article over the weekend, Jim, and unfortunately I believe it might have been in NOLA or Times-Picayune, talking about how Congressman Fleming is another potential challenger to Senator Landrieu. And, of course, Senator Landrieu, right around the holidays, sent out a letter to her supporters saying, bring it on as far as any potential candidates. So she's fired up and ready to go for what is expected to be a tough re-election campaign in 2014.
Well, and it was thought by some that Senator Landrieu would cash in her chips and become a high-paid lobbyist, as did Senators Johnston and Breaux before her. But it looks like at the age of 57, and she'll be 58 when she runs for re-election, that she will seek a fourth term. Veronica in Denham Springs, good morning, Veronica. You're on the air.
Hi. Jim, you mentioned that Senator Inouye was the second longest-serving senator in the country. As a political junkie, I have to ask, who's the longest-serving senator? Would that have been Strom Thurmond?
No, it wasn't Strom, although he was in the top four. But the longest-serving U.S. senator of all time, and this is all time, this is not current numbers,
yes,
was Robert Byrd.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I bet. Thanks.
The man from West Virginia, who became a Democratic stalwart, and unfortunately for Senator Byrd, he was once a member of the Ku Klux Klan, but he changed dramatically and became a left-of-center lawmaker in a very conservative state. He was quite a statesman at the end of his life, and he was in the Senate more than 50 years longer than anyone else. Ted Kennedy, by the way, 46 years in the U.S. Senate. When he died in 2009, he had been there almost 47 years. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. Jeff Palermo with us, and he will be following the news of the year. And one of the events coming apparently on August 29th, the anniversary of Katrina, the 8th anniversary, Trina Edwards, the third wife of the former governor, is expected to give birth to a child.
Yeah, and I've spoken with someone very close to the situation. Apparently, A&E is keeping the Edwards from really talking about it publicly. But on Friday, A&E is having a press conference, I believe in New York, to announce that the Edwards marriage will be part of a reality show, which we knew, but we didn't know exactly any of the particulars as far as what channel would air, but apparently it will be on A&E, and there's going to be some sort of announcement from what I'm hearing on Friday that maybe they'll announce when the show will air and what the title of the show will be. I'm sure it's going to be very clever, you know.
I think the working title is The Governor's Wife.
Well, that would be that's
so it sounds like it's going to be more about Katrina than it is Edwin.
But I know the couple spent a lot of time at Women's Hospital trying to pregnate Trina Edwards. And so congratulations to the happy couple. And I know Edwin is very excited about it. And it'll be interesting to see the reality show mm-hmm. and, you know, how people nationwide feel about Edwin. There's obviously I don't know, a love-hate relationship here. There's people that love him, people that don't like him. And but when they see him on TV, it'll be interesting to see the kind of reaction they'll get out of him.
Well, he'll be 86 on August 7th, and he said on this show last year he would do an interview on this program every year until I died. And at 104, his son, perhaps Edwin Jr.,
yeah.
maybe we'll have an Edwin Jr., will be graduating from high school. And his dad will be 104 years old. So there aren't many 86-year-old men who are starting a family.
No, there's not. But we all know he's a very unique individual. And this was something that they had set out to do pretty much ever since they got married. And he tried to have, obviously, a baby with Candy as well, his previous wife to Trina, and that didn't work out, but I guess science is advanced mm-hmm. enough, and you can do something like that now.
Well, I don't know that any science was involved other than...
Well, I know they spent a lot of time at Women's Hospital, so that's why there had to be some sort of, you know, just wasn't done the old-fashioned way, I guess you could say, Jim.
Well, maybe the governor will talk about that. But... he's 85. His wife is 34. They're a stunning couple. They are seen frequently around the city. And Kevin is noting that perhaps an appropriate title for the new reality show would be The Odd Couple. Do we have the theme, Kevin Gallagher? And speaking of The Odd Couple, Jack Klugman, 90 years old, died December 24th, and he was Oscar Madison, the guy who played Felix Unger, Tony Randall. Now, he fathered a couple of kids when he was in his 70s, mm-hmm. but Edwin's topping that at 86 years old. I think there's something great about that. Here's a guy who spent, think about it, one out of every 10 days of his life, Edwin Edwards' life, was spent in prison. He went in when he was 75 years old, got out when he was 83, and he said, I went in for life, and I came out with a wife. And now you'll have a baby, too.
Yeah.
And maybe this one will be Edwin Jr.
Yeah.
Or Edwina.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I wish him the best of luck.
And Kevin notes that if the baby is born as expected on August 29th, it will be the birthday of Scarlett Romer, the third wife of Edward's former opponent, Charles Elson Buddy Romer III. Thank you, Jeff Palermo. Right. Happy New Year to you. And we'll be back with Jim Simone of the American Sugarcane League after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3. WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. We're joined in studio by Jim Simone, the general manager for the American Sugarcane League. Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning, Jim. Good to see you this morning.
No, the farming remains the biggest industry in our state, and sugarcane farmers are primary movers and shakers. A $3 billion industry.
Yeah, it's important to the state. You know, we've been doing this stuff in Louisiana for over 200 years, started back in the 1750s with the Jesuit priests in New Orleans. So it's important to the state. Lots of money flows through our industry. $1.1 billion farm gate and a $3 billion economic impact to the state. 16,000 jobs, part of our heritage and our history and our social way of life here in Louisiana. So it's ingrained in what we do here, in particularly in South Louisiana.
And you say it started with Jesuit priests?
That's correct. In the 1750s, a Jesuit priest brought cane into New Orleans and started growing it, moved it in from Santo Domingo, actually. and first grew it in what is now the Central Business District in New Orleans. So that's the origin of sugarcane production was in New Orleans in the Central Business District, then moved out into around Audubon Park out that way.
So of these 16,000 jobs, where are most of them located in Louisiana?
In the southern part of the state, what we call the cane belt, kind of on the east and west side of the Atchafalaya River, down through the river parishes, St. James, St. John, St. Charles, and then Ascension, Lafourche, then up north on the river, up toward New Roads, and then over on Bayou Teche, and even into the northern areas of Bunkie and of Oils Parish.
297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org, as we talk with Jim Simon, the general manager for the American Sugarcane League. And your office is based in?
In Thibodaux. The office is in Thibodaux. We produce cane on about 450,000 acres in the state, Jim. So a lot of ground covered by sugarcane producers.
And most of it within earshot of WRKF.
Certainly.
So I'm sure there's some sugarcane farmers right now listening to Jim Simon. Now, what about the quandary on Capitol Hill regarding the farm bill? How is this affecting sugarcane farmers?
Part of our activities with the league certainly encompass legislative activities. Research is our primary effort, but legislative activities too. And we're fortunate that we got an extension. We had worked real hard for a five-year bill and had put a lot of work into getting a five-year bill in place. The forces that be have come up with a one-year extension for us. So we're happy with that, but we'll have to start retraining a new Congress here when they get seated and have to work toward putting a new farm bill together. And hopefully the sugar provisions that are in the extended bill will make its way through to the new bill, or the five-year bill that we'll be working on.
Well, the five-year bill, when's it do or die?
Well, the five-year bill actually ended in September.
Right.
And so we have an extension.
But at some point, you got to do something.
That's correct.
So when does this become a crisis since you're on extension right now?
Well, you know, a lot of folks say Congress and the folks in Washington don't do anything until they absolutely have to. And so September of next year is when this bill will expire. So we've got to get something done before then, and hopefully we can.
Okay, so you have a few months to take action.
Yeah.
Okay. 297-5633 for Jim Simon. And you have made some appearances in different places, including one recently, as a listener points out, at the Lafayette Chamber of Commerce. And you noted in an address there, according to our erudite listener, that sugar is the most heavily subsidized commodity in the world, but the U.S. sugar policy does not, in your judgment, pay as much attention or actually put money in the pockets of sugarcane farmers, beet farmers. Why not?
You know, our program, none of our sugarcane farmers, beet farmers, or cane farmers receive any direct checks from the federal government with our program. What our program does is essentially create a balanced market for our product. We're an import-sensitive product. And so what our program does is control imports into the U.S. to create a stable market for our producers. It allows our producers to fairly compete with producers from around the world. So it's a policy that works. It's a no-cost policy to the federal government. And in times of tight financial situations like we find ourselves in the U.S., this no-cost sugar policy works well.
Okay. A 218-year industry in Louisiana, and it is one that has stayed the course. And sugarcane farmers don't get a lot of attention, but maybe they should get more, and I guess that's part of your job. Charlie Malasa held your job at one point, didn't he?
That's correct, yes. When Charlie left the league to run for Congress in 2004 or so, I became his predecessor at the league. So a great organization, great people to work for, a well-respected organization, not only here in Louisiana, but throughout the nation.
You work, I would think, with a congressional delegation, Jim, not only in Louisiana, but around the country, don't you?
That's correct. Yes, we do.
So how does that work?
Well, we spend a lot of time in Washington, a lot of money in Washington, working on behalf of our cause. We work very heavily with the other cane-producing states in Florida, Texas and Hawaii, and, of course, our brethren to the north, the beet producers up in the upper Midwest. So we're fairly effective in Washington. We have a unified voice, and that's how you get things done in Washington, is to be unified in your approach. We work with beet folks, cane folks all across the country, and commit resources to our efforts. And that unity along with committed resources really pays dividends for us in making sure that we have a program that will allow our industry to sustain itself.
As far as how you work hand in glove with other farmers in other areas of farming, how does that work?
We are very active with Louisiana Farm Bureau, a great partner of ours. So we find coalitions and opportunities to work together whenever possible. A standalone approach, whether it be in Washington or in Baton Rouge, just is not a very successful way to go. So we work very hard to find coalitions to work with.
297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Katie asks, who's responsible for there being no farm bill passed at the end of the year?
Well, we have an extension. So when you look at responsible parties, you know there's a president, a Senate, and a House, and Democrats and Republicans. And when they can't come together, I'd like to think that they're all responsible, every one of them. So to point the finger at one particular group as being the source of not having a farm bill, I just don't like to do that. I think folks that govern us all need to come together and figure out how to get things done.
What was the sticking point, literally?
Well, when you look at the farm bill in the House side, the House offered $35 billion in cuts to the farm bill. The Senate side offered $24 billion in cuts. Some wanted more cuts. Some wanted less cuts. You can imagine that the fiscal conservatives wanted more cuts to the farm bill, the liberal side less. And so putting that together just didn't work. And hence we've got an extension.
All right. So it was the primarily the Republican U.S. House that wanted more cuts.
That's correct.
But the farm bill also includes expenditures for things like food stamps.
That's
right?
Exactly right. In fact, about 80% of farm bill spending is for nutrition programs. And that's a sticking point for the Republican side and the far right, no doubt.
Is that where the cuts were going to be made, or were they going to be made across the board?
No, there were cuts to food stamps, but probably not to the liking enough cuts for the far right. So,
what about cuts to farmers?
Yes, we've absorbed cuts. In fact, I'd like to think that if America and the Congress could follow the lead provided by U.S. agriculture, we're probably in pretty good shape, because we've taken more than our fair share of cuts to foreign policy.
It's interesting that, as I noted, we have three doctors on Capitol Hill. We've got lawyers and people in other walks of life. When's the last time a farmer got elected to a congressional post in Louisiana?
And this is
the biggest industry in the state.
Yeah, it's been a while. Been quite a while.
I can't think of one.
Yeah, neither can I.
So because of that, does farming, the biggest industry in Louisiana, does it get neglected sometimes?
Well, it's our job to make sure that it doesn't. And from sugar's perspective, I think we do a pretty good job of doing that. It's certainly important to the state, but that's not just a Louisiana trend. That's a national trend. Mm-hmm. Less than 1% of the population is close to agriculture today. So trying to find folks to make it to Washington and get off of their farms to legislate on behalf of our industry and our country, are it's tough to do.
Jim Simone of the American Sugarcane League. John West in Port Allen. Actually, I think John is in New Roads. He says pecans are Louisiana's healthiest crop. You're laughing. That's, you know, that goes well with sugar sometimes.
Certainly. Well, it's tough to make a pecan praline without a little brown sugar to put on that.
There you go.
To make that with, Jim.
There you go. Now, often we hear, for example, that the ExxonMobil plant here in Baton Rouge, second largest refinery in the world. Now, as far as sugar refineries, we've got some of the largest in the world right here in our state, don't we?
Yes, we do. We've got 11 raw sugar mills in Louisiana, and some pretty big ones at that, and then two actual refineries that convert our raw sugar to whites, the Domino Refinery in Chalmette, and also one that's has a Louisiana ownership interest, the LSR Refinery in Gramercy, that takes our raw sugars, converts them to white sugar, and then that's the product that's retailed and sold into the market. So,
the Domino Refinery, how many people are employed there?
Oh, Jim, we as an organization are not closely related with that group, but in the hundreds, I'm thinking around 300 folks or so employed at the Chalmette Refinery.
Which is one of the largest.
It is. It's one of the largest raw sugar refining facilities in the world.
And these places, they're state of the art, aren't they?
They're old facilities, but a lot of money has been put into these facilities to upgrade them and make them compatible and competitive in today's market. So in sugar, we are constantly looking for ways to improve what we do, to improve our productivity, to improve our efficiencies everywhere from planting cane on the farm to refining it and packaging it and delivering it to consumers.
This is a worldwide market, obviously. How does Louisiana participate not only in providing sugar cane to the rest of the country, but to the rest of the world?
Well, we're import sensitive, so we don't export any of our product. We import about 20% of our domestic needs. In Louisiana, we produce about enough sugar to take care of about 60 million Americans, about 20% of the population.
You're saying none of that goes abroad?
None of it.
None of it?
Nope. Import sensitive. By free trade agreement, NAFTA, CAFTA, and WTO agreements, we're required to import sugar into the U.S. So,
and where does that come from, Jenna?
Brazil, Guatemala, Colombia, Mexico, a lot of the islands, the Caribbean islands, the Philippines. Most every tropical country has some right to import into the U.S.
Would it be a good thing to be allowed to export?
We could export, but it's not sensible right now to export when we're a deficit producer. So everything that we produce in the U.S., we consume in the U.S.
So you're saying there's not enough sugar produced in the U.S. to accommodate the U.S. population?
That's correct.
So that's why we
import.
I'm getting the import sensitive part of it.
Correct.
That is interesting. We consume lots of sugar in the U.S., don't we?
We do. We do.
Well, sugar, of course, is denounced as something that's bad for us, but you have a different take on it.
Well, certainly. You know, it's we feel it's moderation, an active lifestyle and moderation in our diets, Jim. We think that being wise in your choices as to what you eat ultimately control your health. And so we preach a moderate diet with an active lifestyle and activity in what we do.
And I must say, for those who denounce sugar as something that's not good, can you imagine us with no sugar in the United States? That's like trying to go to a balanced budget in one year. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, Jim. And then we may have to change the name of the football game that's being played tonight. What would we call it?
That's right. Well, will you be at the Sugar Bowl tonight with Muhammad Ali?
I will not with Muhammad Ali. I won't be there. But yeah, the Sugar Bowl is important to us. You know, it's kind of the namesake, and sometimes we forget that the Sugar Bowl was started in the 1940s and played in the old Tulane Stadium, which was originally a sugarcane field. So Once again, it's important, an important industry for our state, socially, economically, our history, very important to our way of life here in Louisiana.
Well, a $3 billion annual industry, you can imagine what would happen if it suddenly went by the wayside.
Certainly.
It would
certainly
be have a devastating effect on the economy and to the 16,000 people who are involved. Of those jobs, how many are those out in the field toiling?
Probably about 4,000 to 5,000 of those. The rest of their jobs are direct, indirect type jobs supported by agricultural equipment dealers and farm implement companies and those kinds of folks.
Well, thank you, Jim Simone, the general manager of the American Sugarcane League, based right here in Louisiana in the lovely town of Thibodaux. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, thank you for listening, everybody, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.